So the agenda for this week is that we're going to do today, hopefully by about partway through the class, we should be done with vector space ranking, which is the main ranking that's used by most IR and also search engines. So we talked last time about Boolean ranking, and we talked about what are its some problems with it. For example, the fact that it doesn't consider partial matches into account. So we're going to talk about vector space ranking. In fact, we consider first a bag of words model and then view the bag of words as a vector. So you can actually use it as a bag of words, in which case you get a similarity metric called a Jaccard similarity metric, which is basically the metric for evaluating similarity between two sets. And then you can generalize it such that it becomes a metric for evaluating similarity between two bags. Okay, so we'll use that, and then we go to vector similarity. And then there is this idea called cosine theta metric, which is basically the angle between two vectors, and we'll talk about that. And then end with some ideas about how to improve the term weight. So in thinking of the document as a bag of words or a vector in the space of words, so you need the coefficients for the words. And in the beginning of the lecture, we'll just assume those just correspond to the frequency of the words. And then in the last part of this vector similarity ranking, we will consider, in fact, an independent idea. It has nothing really to do with vector similarity. It's more an idea of, can you do something better than just counting the number of instances of the word? Should you, for example, normalize them? Should you, for example, give higher weight to less common words? So that's the TF and IDF weighting. Okay, and one of the interesting points would be that TF-IDF weighting, we will discuss it right after the vector similarity, but it could be used for Jaccard similarity too. So we'll talk about that, and depending on time, I will then shift to indexing and retrieval, because that's the other thing that you need for the first project. Okay, and then we'll come back after those two topics, we'll come back to more interesting ways of doing information retrieval in terms of extending vector similarity. So that's basically the higher level view of where we are going, and we'll actually go through that. Are there any questions before I start? Yes. Yes, this one is already, this one is in the IR part, and the indexing part, I wrote it, if you change the name to PPTX rather than PPT, you can download it. Okay, they're online basically, except the second one, if you try to download, as you probably saw me, you'll actually have a failure because it's looking for .ppt, but it's .pptx. Okay. You have to go through the lecture notes. Okay, so we were looking previously at documents as essentially logical formulae, propositional logical formulae, where the propositions are the keywords. Okay, and then we went through that for a while. Now we're going to just look at documents as just bag of words. Okay, so here is the idea. So for example, if I have these documents, document A has system and human system engineering testing of EPS. That's the entire document content. And then B and C, etc. And the way I will represent these documents essentially is in terms of, these are the keywords, so these are the set items, and these are the weights, or the number of times each of the item is present in the bag. So for example, the first bag, the bag A, will have two instances of system, one instance of human, one instance of EPS. Okay. For example, you notice that I did not have off here, OF. Okay. That's because we are thinking as of now that we are in the traditional IR model, where somebody decided what the keywords are. And the keywords were only these. Okay, which was just a subset of words occurring. Okay, in some sense, actually, one reason why people used to look at human-made keywords that you can think of, you can give a positive spin on it and a negative spin on it. The positive spin, presumably, is that there are just too many words in a document and there are probably certain keywords that are actually more representative of the document than other words. Okay? And so humans can potentially find out what's the right keyword for this document. The negative spin on that, of course, is A, it's too complicated, you know, too time-consuming for the humans to come into the loop and start writing this, especially if it's not a library and you're actually talking about documents on the web. And the second thing is you could also actually argue that the reason people wanted keywords is because of the computational limitations of the old times, okay, where essentially you really could not index document in terms of all possible words appearing in that document. If you did, you would have had huge indexes, okay? Remember this. Some of these ideas came at the time when you had, you know, catalogs that you pull. I mean, how many of you have gone through a library where you can pull a little drawer and then this, flashcards will be there, you know? So this is where actually some of these ideas started, okay? And if you start having an instance of every vocabulary word in English, then you will wind up having a lot more complex indexing that you have to do, okay? But in fact, on the web scale, actually, we don't have the luxury of humans coming and looking at which are the keywords. So we essentially have to take all words anyway. And then on the other hand, we also probably have enough computational power to actually have very large scale indexes generated as well as handled well. Which is basically what the second part of this lecture is going to be, next class. Okay, so in a way we kind of act as if people decide what the keywords are, but one idea is all words in the document can be keywords too, you know, which is basically what happens on the web. Okay, so these are the keywords and these are the documents being represented as bags. You can think in this particular representation, you can think of this either as a bag or as a vector. For now, think of it as a bag because I want to tell you how to compare bags in terms of their similarity. Then we'll think of it as a vector, okay? If you think of it as a bag, then these are the items in the bag and these are the number of copies of each item in the bag, okay? And if you think of it as a vector, these are the what? These are the different axes, okay, of an n-dimensional space. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. We are talking about a 12-dimensional space, okay? This is just as we have, x-axis, y-axis. You have an interface axis, a user axis, a system axis, a human axis, and so on. There are 12 different axes, okay? And each document then becomes a point in this 12-dimensional space. And in fact, it becomes a vector in that 12-dimensional space because a vector is essentially the line connecting the origin to that point. Okay, so you can view these either as vectors or as bags, and depending on how you view them, you develop the kind of, the similarity matrix. Okay, so the first one, as I said, since we are coming from sets, it makes sense to look at bags. And I could have used this as the example, but in fact, from now until I change my mind, I'll be actually using this as the example because I have everything worked out for them. And so here, it's about 10 documents. I didn't even show you what those documents contained. I essentially tell you these documents are indexed in terms of 6 keywords, T1 to T6. And I'm telling you right now what are those keywords. T1 is database, T2 is SQL, T3 is index, T4 is the word regression, T5 is the word likelihood, T6 is the word linear. Okay? And I have 10 documents. And those documents essentially have in D1 24 instances of the word database, 22 and 21 of the word SQL, 9 of the word index, 0 of these two words, and 3 instances of the word linear. Okay, so in fact, if you look at this, you can kind of see that the first 5 documents are sort of more instances of T1 to T3 and fewer instances of T4 to T6. Okay, and finally, the last few instances have more instances of this part, okay, and fewer instances of these words. And you know, one thing that you can think of in the back of your head is really you have a corpus of 10 documents. First 5 documents are some database articles, books about databases. Okay, and then the next five documents are really sort of books about statistics and data mining. Okay, that's why the words regression, likelihood, and linear occur more often in the last five, and the words database, SQL, index occur more often in the first five. Of course, there will be some leakage. You know, the word linear might be used in a database, in a document just about databases, except it will probably have fewer of those instances of that than the other words. Okay, so you have some idea right now of the ground truth. In fact, I'm telling you, is these are sort of data mining books or data mining documents, these are database documents. Data mining and statistics documents, these are database documents. Okay, and then we'll see how we will actually compute the similarity, etc., and what we actually wind up seeing the ground truth. So now if I think of these as bags, okay. By the way, if you think of these as bags, then the simplest metric for computing the similarity between two sets is something called Jaccard similarity metric. Okay, if I have two sets A and B, to see how close A is to B, I can compute this, the cardinality of A intersection B divided by the cardinality of A union B. It has the following useful properties. If A and B are disjoint, that means they have nothing in common, then it would be zero, because A intersection B would be zero. If they are identical, that means the both sets are exactly one and the same, okay, then it would be 1, because A intersection B would be A, and A union B would also be A, so the sizes of both are the same, so you will wind up having 1. So similarity would be 0 when they are disjoint, 1 when they are identical, and it will be a number between 0 and 1 for everything else. Normally that's all you want when you are talking about similarity matrix. Okay. So basically, if I do this, then the only tricky question, of course, is how do I extend this for bags? Okay, this is true for sets. How do I extend it for bags? One small change. All we are going to do is we are going to take, so if I have a bag A of 5 oranges and 8 apples, and a bag B has 3 oranges and 12 apples, okay, the intersection bag is basically, so if I'm computing the intersection bag between A and B, then since this has 5 oranges, this has 3 oranges, the intersection bag will have 3 oranges. Okay, and since this has 8 apples and this has 12 apples, the intersection bag will have 8 apples. Okay, so that's your intersection bag. What about the union bag? It's the same way, union bag will have 5 oranges and 12 apples. Now I can talk about the size of the bags. And I just basically can compute the size of the intersection bag divided by the size of the union bag. Okay? This is Jaccard similarity. This actually is a very useful similarity metric. There is nothing really wrong with it. Even now, even today, if you go to some papers in IR or web search, for certain aspects of retrieval, they might wind up using Jaccard similarity metric. Okay, we will talk about vector similarity, which is way more popular, but it's not because this is dead. It's just that this is another way of looking at things. Yes?
You're assuming apple and orange are equally important
here, since you're adding 5 and 12. Yeah, but I was assuming that here too, in the set similarity too.
But they could be different.
The question, of course, is as to which parts are important or less important is this idea of weights per terms that we'll talk about later. Okay, right now we are assuming all words are equally important. Okay, so all items in the bag are equally important.
Why is
there are certain things that you can, there are more interesting mathematical properties for vector similarity, that's one thing. And the conceptually, for example, this idea of extending vector similarity to latent semantic indexing, etc., are much more easier. So you will see that. Okay, that's one main reason, really. On the other hand, actually, I think that's pretty much the main reason. Basically, you have a good geometric interpretation of what is happening in the vector similarity computations. Okay. So in this particular case, if I do the same bag similarity for this, okay, then similarity between D1 and D2 would be, so D1 here and D2 here, so the intersection bag will basically have minimum of each of the dimensions, and the union bag will have max of each of the dimensions, and then you add them up. Okay, so this would be 24 plus 10 plus 5, right? 24 plus 10 plus 5, yeah, because this would be 0, this would be 0, this would be 0, because they are all the minimums. Okay, divided by you have 32 plus 21 plus 9 plus 3 plus 3. Okay, and so that would basically get you a number. 0.57 is the number right now. Okay, so what happens? So this is the way it is. So what happens if, in fact, I just, all I do is, so this is a similarity. So similarity between D1 and D2 is 0.57. It's not as low as 0. It's not as high as 1. It's kind of in between. It's 50%, 57%. So one question that you might want to ask yourself is, suppose all I did was I took D1 and concatenated it to itself. So I just artificially boosted its length. Do you see what I'm saying? So I took the document, you know, kill it and yank it twice. Okay, so that I have two sizes, two, you know, instances of the same document. Okay, so has the document changed now? No. In your way of looking at it, the document hasn't changed. Would the similarity calculation change? It changes, right? The similarity calculation changes, and so in fact, that's something that you want to make sure that you want to normalize the similarity computation such that, for example, such that essentially the similarity doesn't depend upon the length of the document. It should depend upon the distribution of the words in the document, but not on the length. Okay, so if I define vectors that similarity this way, then obviously it's not normalized. Okay, but I could normalize it, it turns out. What I could do is I could take each document, okay, take the size of the document, divide each coefficient by the size. Now, the moment I start doing that, the semantics of bag are out the window. What does it mean to have 0.37 apples and 0.54 oranges? You know, you can't really call it a bag, but the computations would work. Okay, so if you are into actually computing a normalized Jaccard similarity, it's not hard. Okay, what you could do basically is you normalize each document by dividing 24 by 24 plus 21 plus 9 plus 0 plus 0 plus 3. And then similarly 21 by the size. So when you double the size, then the document, the coefficients are not going to change. Right? And so the similarity would not change. Yes, sir.
So that's assuming it's already normalized, your example?
No, this is not normalized at all because I didn't ensure that the lengths are the same.
Okay.
Right? If you normalize it, in fact, the normalization is something that you would talk about in vectors too, okay? Except when you normalize a vector, you have a clean understanding of what it means to normalize a vector. So for example, if I have, you know, in my two-dimensional case, let's say if I have K1 and K2, and then I have a vector which has two instances of K1 and one instance of K2, then the vector would have been something like that. Okay, and if I just doubled it such that it became 4 and 2, the vector just became like that. And I can always normalize it by saying, I don't care about the actual vector, I only care about the unit vector in that direction. So when I normalize a vector, I have a notion of unit vector. Okay, when I normalize a bag, I don't have a notion of unit bag. Because people, I mean, you know, you can give it, but I mean, essentially, so if you really like Jaccard similarity rather than cosine thetas, you could do that by normalizing. Okay, and normalization does make sense. You agree with that, because if you just increase the size of the document by doubling it, you don't expect that the similarity should change. Okay, is the normalization a problem for Boolean retrieval? No, because it's a set. So it doesn't matter how big it becomes, you know, if you double the set, okay, by just copying the items, it's still the same set. Okay, bag on the other hand changes in size. Okay, so normalization is an important thing, and it can be done in this case too. I just did not, you know, I mean, so don't think of this as just a major failure for bag similarity. You can always normalize the bags and then compute the Jaccard similarity. Okay, any questions? Okay, so now we'll, since, you know, pretty much I'm talking about this without talking about it, but, you know, instead of thinking of these guys as this document as a bag, yes. Yes.
I understand how you do that, but I'm still having some questions about if you, like, if D1, the amount of the words in D1 increase more than D2, then wouldn't it be 1 similar to the normalization into 0.57?
I understand. What are you saying? No, all I am saying is right now neither of these are normalized. Okay? So if you were to normalize, then doubling the size and normalizing would still get you to the same normalized bag. So it's basically talking about the percentage of oranges in your bag and the percentage of apples in your bag. That's what it's telling you. You know, a normalized bag is telling you the fractions of different items. Okay, that's what it's telling you. And then you can compute them. You can define mins and maximums. Min and max are defined on any real number. They don't have to be integers. And so you can do min over the two bags on the top, that's the intersection bag, and max over the two bags in the bottom. Okay? Fine. So the other thing, of course, is rather than think of these as bags, I can think of these as vectors. If I think of them as vectors, these become the, I mean, the more obvious thing to think of is these become, the terms become the different axes. So right now I am in a six-dimensional space. Each document is a point in a six-dimensional space, or a vector in a six-dimensional space. Okay. Although we'll mostly focus right now as on looking at documents as vectors in the space of terms, as long as I'm looking at that, you can think of the opposite way. I could also think of terms as vectors in the space of documents. Do you understand that? Okay. So each term, so term T1, so I can decide that I have a 10-dimensional space where vector the T1 vector is, you know, has coefficients 24 in the D1 direction, 32 in the D2 direction, etc. We won't do that for now. We will only consider documents as vectors in the space of keywords, but the alternative view has uses too. For example, if you want to think of terms as vectors in the space of documents, then you can talk about which terms are correlated, which two terms are very close to each other. And if there are keywords that are too close to each other, maybe the fact that both of them are present in the document shouldn't be counted as two independent sources of evidence. Do you see what I'm saying? We will get to that later, okay? But this is yet another view, nice thing about vector view, okay? Because now you can think of terms as vectors in the space of documents, or you can think of documents as the vectors in the space of terms. And, you know, as we live to the next week, we will actually try saying that there is some other thing called factors, okay? And both terms and documents are vectors in the space of factors, which is basically what latent semantic indexing does, okay? So there are advantages. You know, there are all these advantages that you will, you know, learn, you'll see basically about the view of vectors. Yes.
You can do the same thing with the Boolean model or even the bag.
Yes, the duality.
In the sense, looking at similarity between terms instead of looking at similarity between documents.
Yes. Yes.
By applying.
Yes. I mean, so you could do, for example, these terms as bags. So each term is a bag in the space of documents. That is something that you can do. Okay. Okay, so once you come to the vector model, then so you can think of each document as a vector in this n-dimensional space, and the coefficients in each of the axes are the weights of those terms. Okay, and until now we are assuming the weights are just the frequency of that term in that document, the number of times that keyword appeared in the document. Okay, So if I have vectors, then how do I define similarity between vectors? So if I have two vectors, how do I define similarity between the vectors? Okay. One idea, of course, is to compute the distance between these two points. Okay. That would be Euclidean distance between the two vectors. Okay. Now, if you do Euclidean distance, that would be a similarity metric, because if in fact the documents are exactly the same, then the Euclidean distance would be zero. Okay, but there is no upper bound, because upper bound can be dependent upon, suppose I have one document which is a short one and it is like this, and there is another document that is a really, really long one, and that just goes on like that somewhere. Now I am trying to compute the unit, you know, Euclidean distance between those two points. That could be really large. So upper bound is not there, lower bound is there. Zero is the most similar. Yes. Okay. So Euclidean distance works. But if you don't normalize it, it doesn't have a good, I mean, basically you have the same problems as before, because you can double the size of the document and the distance will change. Okay? So the other alternative, so you could stick to the Euclidean and consider unit vector in the direction, in the same direction as the document. Okay? So unit vector essentially, you know, is reasonably well defined for all of you, right? So if I have AI plus BJ plus CK, where IJ and K are the directions, then the unit vector is defined as A over the size of the vector. You can define size of the vector in multiple different ways. The normal way that most of you use is just the Euclidean length of the vector. Okay? So that would be square root of A square plus B square plus C square. Right? And then you do this, and so this would be I plus B over square root of A square plus B square plus C square, J plus C over square root of A square plus B square plus C square, K. And that would be the unit vector in the same direction as the original vector. Okay? Now if I take these unit vectors, I can then compute the Euclidean distance between the tips of those unit vectors. That would be a similarity metric. Okay, now how far is this going to get? How large can the distance between two documents, two vectors get? So if in fact I'm going to normalize the vectors such that they're unit vectors. Do you understand what I'm saying? So think of two unit vectors in k dimensions, and what is the largest distance between those two points? What?
The angle between them become 180.
Yes. Okay, so that would be 2. Right? So there is an upper bound for the Euclidean distance. There is an upper bound for the Euclidean distance. Okay? A different way of, so I could use Euclidean distance and normalize it and I can get by with that. A different way of computing similarity is to essentially take dot product between the two vectors. You have two vectors. Since I'm thinking of these as vectors, I can consider dot products between the vectors. And the dot product between vectors essentially is defined as the length of the one vector times the length of the second vector times the cosine theta of the cosine of the angle between the two vectors. You guys remember this stuff from at some point of time you must have done vectors, right? So the dot product between two vectors, AI plus BJ plus CK and A dash I plus B dash J plus C dash K would be, is actually very easy to compute. It's A times A star plus B times B star, I mean B dash plus C times C dash. That means A dash plus B dash plus C dash. That's the dot product between two vectors. And it is also equivalent to, you can show that this is equivalent to the length of the vector v1, this is v1, this is vector v2, so the length of the vector v1 times length of the vector v2 times cosine of the angle between v1 and v2. Okay, and yes. 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 That's a very good point. So actually, in fact, this is something that we should have talked about for the bag representation too. When you guys said the unit vectors, the largest distance between two unit vectors in the n-dimensional space would be when they are 180 degrees away from each other. Okay? But that's impossible because you will wind up needing negative weights for the document. Okay? All your documents, you know, the way we are looking at it, the documents are all in the first quadrant. Okay, so they're all positive. Okay, so the farthest they can ever get is essentially the hypotenuse. Okay, and the same thing here too, but you know, but basically the angle is in the first quadrant, so the angle is between, the cosine theta would be between 0 and 1. Okay, so you're multiplying the magnitudes of the two vectors times a number which is between 0 and 1. That's what is your dot product. It too has the makings of a similarity function because it does become 0. For example, if two vectors are perpendicular to each other, then the cosine theta would be cosine of 90 degrees, which will be 0. So it doesn't matter how big they are. Now, does that actually capture any intuition we have about documents? I would say yes, because if you have two dimensions, one document, you know, this dimension is keyword key one, this dimension is keyword key two, keyword k2, then a vector which has like 15 instances of k2 and another vector which has 4 instances of k1, they have nothing in common. Presumably, you are saying k1 and k2 are completely different keywords. So this guy only has 15 instances of K2, this only has 4 instances of K1, they have nothing in common, so their similarity should be seen as 0. If you want to think of their similarity as anything other than 0, then you have to admit that the terms are actually not independent. Okay, which is a huge, huge assumption we made when we started looking, when we started thinking of documents as vectors in the space of these keywords. The question is this space defined by these keywords, is it an orthonormal space? If it's orthonormal, that means all the axes are essentially independent, perpendicular to each other, which is the normal view we have. Okay, but the algebra, the linear algebra would work as long as the vectors are spanning the space. Right, so for example, you could, in a two-dimensional space, we normally tend to think of the axis like this, right? I can span these two dimensions with these two vectors. This is vector v1, I mean, this is my y-axis, this is my x-axis. The coordinates for any vector would be its projections onto each of those axes. Do you see what I'm saying? So in that particular case, if one only has all y instances, one only has all x instances, you would still compute their similarity to be 0, but you don't really believe it because you think that x and y are sort of correlated. Okay? This is another, so we already, I think there was a question last class as to, aren't we doing stuff that might make retrieval kind of, might make us think that certain wrong document is similar to the query? And I said, you should only be surprised that anything that you're getting out of this kind of retrieval where you think of documents as bags of words is actually working out. And so if you are on top of that surprise, you should add this surprise, this extra surprise, which is that not only are you thinking of documents as bags of words, you're thinking that they're actually vectors in the space of words, and you're assuming that the words are completely uncorrelated, which is a huge, huge assumption. Okay, but we'll see how far we'll go. That's basically the idea.
I think that works because we care about precision and not recall.
It's actually there is more to it. I mean, I think we can improve we can improve these retrieval methods by essentially computing the orthonormal basis, which is sort of what latent semantic indexing does, but it's costly. So the question is, how much are you willing to pay? Okay. Yes. We are assuming that the keywords themselves don't have any similarity between each other. They are zero similar.
Okay.
Right? So if I have a document which only has 5 instances of keyword K1 and nothing else, and another document which has 17 instances of keyword K2 and nothing else, then pretty much every possible similarity metric I have seen till now says they are zero similar. Jacquard similarity says they are zero similar. So does the Boolean metric. So does vector similarity, because we assume keywords themselves are completely orthogonal to each other. But that would probably be true if, in fact, somebody made sure that that was true. Okay, and you know, they don't have to be normally true. In fact, many a time what happens is keywords are very well correlated, and it's not a bad thing. Sometimes when the keywords are correlated, you can, in fact, that can be found by looking at this view, keywords as vectors in the space of documents, and compute the vector similarity between the term vectors. And if they're close, that means they're actually correlated keywords. And so if in fact somebody is looking for computer, the word computer, you might say maybe you should also add the word science to your query, because computer and science seem to occur together in my database, in my document list. That you would find if in fact the word computer is distributed in the same way over the documents as the word science is. Okay? And if that actually happened, then the moment that happened, the keywords are no longer correlated. So we kind of know keywords are not correlated. So we keep suspending our disbelief for different phases. For now, we'll suspend the disbelief about keywords being correlated and act as if they were uncorrelated, and then do the similarity. Okay? Yes?
Another big challenge I find with LSI is that they define similarity between two terms, but not two phrases.
We can come back to LSI. I can't answer that right now without losing half the class. So we can talk about that outside the class, or it become clearer next week.
Okay?
So fine. So we can do the dot product similarity. And dot product similarity, is it normalized? No, it's not normalized, because you're multiplying cosine theta, which is between 0 and 1, times the size of A1 times the size of A2. I mean, times the size of V1 times the size of V2. If you want to normalize it, what do you need to do? You essentially take the dot product between the unit vectors in the document direction. Or equivalently, if you must take V1 and V2, then you take V1 times V2 times cosine theta by the size of V1 and the size of V2. Okay? So that is the celebrated cosine theta metric, which is basically used, it's a very popular metric in IR. So you're essentially going to consider the dot product between the two unit vectors in the query and document, or the two document directions. If you do that, you will get a number between 0 and 1. 0 if in fact they are perpendicular to each other, and 1 if in fact those two unit vectors are actually the same, and some number in between otherwise. Okay? So let me just go through whatever I said on the board in the slide, so you can go back and look at the slides at more slowly. So you can compute the distance metric, you can do the Euclidean distance metric, you can do the Euclidean distance between the unit vectors, that's fine too. You can do the dot product distance, and you can do the dot product normalized, where you actually take the dot product between the unit vectors in the two document directions. Okay? That's what it is. Okay, so ultimately, if you take the dot product between, if you take the cosine theta metric, then you're really just taking the angle between the two vectors corresponding to the two documents and taking the cosine of it. That's all. Okay? So let's apply these things. So in fact, one issue is, why should I use cosine theta metric and not the Euclidean distance metric? Again, there is no good answer. Okay? they are two different similarity matrix. Cosine theta is used much more often. In fact, it works almost about the same way as Euclidean distance. Euclidean distance works just almost the same way as cosine theta. But there's some interesting differences, we'll see. So if, for example, I'm looking at these documents, D1 to D10, and I'm just computing document-document similarity matrix. Okay, I use the word matrix for the first time in this class today, and you will start using it forever in the rest of the class. So in fact, you can actually see this thing as a matrix, right? You can see this as, right now the way I wrote it, it's a D by T matrix. Documents are the rows, terms are the columns. Okay, if I take its transpose, it becomes T by D matrix. Okay, and given a matrix, you essentially have row space and column space. Again, by the way, this is the linear algebra that you are supposed to start looking back at. Okay, what did I say? So you can think of this matrix as the DT matrix: documents in the rows, terms in the columns. Okay, and you can also, if you take the transpose, you'll get the TD matrix: terms in the rows, documents in the columns. And so for given matrix, in fact, we were talking about the fact that I can think of documents as the vectors in the space of terms, or you can think of terms as vectors in the space of documents. That differentiation is nothing but row space and column space of a matrix from linear algebra. Okay? We'll hear more about it later, but you know, so there's obviously a connection there. And so now what I'm actually doing is taking DT matrix and I'm computing a DD matrix, where ijth element of the DD matrix would be the similarity between DI and DJ. Okay? And I'm going to show that as a matrix right now. And now if I compute that matrix, what would that matrix look like? It'll be a symmetric matrix. You'll agree with that, right? Because if you have a similarity measure worth its name, then DI is just as similar to DJ as DJ is to DI. If you wind up having different numbers, then you are talking about Lala kind of similarity. Okay? So obviously this similarity matrix that I'll show you would be symmetric. Furthermore, what are you most similar to? If you are a document, you are most similar to what? Yourself. If you find yourself being more similar to your friend than to yourself, you're in trouble. Okay? How many of you know of the story of Charlie Chaplin lookalike contest somewhere held in Denmark, where Charlie Chaplin also took part and came in second? Right? Because most of our problem is we don't quite know how to evaluate similarity. Charlie Chaplin was second most similar person to Charlie Chaplin. But we hope that our documents are smarter than him. And so we expect the documents to be most similar to themselves. So this document similarity matrix would have the maximum similarity in the diagonal, DII. Okay? Now, finally, I will say the more similar, the whiter I will make that entry, okay, the less similar, the grayer or darker I will make. Okay, then I will get actually a little picture, okay, and a picture which looks like that. Okay, so this is the picture I would get if I use normalized Euclidean similarity. Okay, as expected, the documents are most similar to themselves, because the diagonal is nice and white, okay? And it sort of, you can kind of sort of see that there are varying levels of similarity to the rest. Here is the same thing except with the cosine theta matrix, okay? Again, this is white, okay? But you can kind of see that this space is more white, this space is white, these two are dark. What does that mean? It essentially is telling you that this space of D1 to D5 are very similar to each other. And similarly, the space of D6 to D10 are similar to each other. And D5, anything from this part to this part, it's not very similar. and anything from this part is not very similar. Okay, which is your intuition, because I started by saying the top five are database books, the next five are data mining statistics books, and you really would like to see probably something like this. Okay, and you know, when you compute and similarity between a single document and another single document, you get a number. What can you say about that number other than looks like a good number between 0 and 1, right? So really, if I'm computing Euclidean versus cosine in isolation, you can't really tell which is the right number. The important thing is not which is the right number. The important thing is whether or not you are actually able to differentiate yourself from your group versus the outside groups. Okay? So this one is basically the cosine theta metric essentially shows a better performance. So this is the most I will do for you as to why we'll stick to cosine theta metric. Okay, if you're ever, you know, wondering why did I use cosine theta as against Euclidean distance between unit vectors, which is also well defined, you know, think about this picture. Basically, this one sort of is harder to see the pattern, that in fact the first five are very close to each other, the other five are very close to each other. Okay, this one is much simpler to see. Yes. Yeah.
This problem card seems a lot similar to cosine, right? In the sense where you're just computing distance metrics. But Euclidean distance is often very common in clustering applications.
Mm-hmm. No, actually, again, one of the very interesting points is how you, when we get to clustering, we will talk about this, that you define a cluster based on a distance measure. You get different clusters if you define it in terms of Euclidean versus cosine theta versus something else. Okay, and since you asked me this, you know, you also might be aware of the fact that sometimes kernel-based clustering methods are more effective. And what a kernel-based clustering method is doing underneath it all is it's changing the distance metric. Okay, you change the distance metric, clustering changes. That's exactly what you saw here. Here, these clusters are clearly delineated. Here, you can't see the difference. Okay. Okay. So I kind of computed, I kind of showed you both of these guys in action. I didn't give you the actual numbers, but the way I made these is this was closer to 1, and this was closer to 0. And I basically, you know, multiplied the intensity, which is 256, let's say, by the similarity. 256 times 1 would be 256, so it will be really a white pixel. 250 times 0 would be 0, it will be a black pixel in between some level of dark, you know, grayness. Okay. So, any questions on this stuff? So we talked about three metrics in today's class. One is the Jaccard similarity between bags. It can be normalized or unnormalized. We always would like to normalize unless people tell us otherwise. Okay. And then, just a second. And then we talked about the vector similarity. We talked about the view of looking at documents as vectors, and then we computed two different similarity metrics, Euclidean distance based and cosine theta based. Okay? And we're sort of leaning towards cosine theta. Yes?
Okay, so we have given the mix
later. Mm-hmm.
What condition?
We more or less always choose cosine theta metric. And the best justification I'll give you in this class is this picture. Because if you knew that Euclidean is doing this and cosine theta is doing this, I would argue that you would pick cosine theta. Because in fact, your ground truth is that these two are two different clusters. Okay, but once you pick a measure, all you are doing is sorting with respect to that measure, which is what I'm going to talk about next. Okay, so how do I answer queries? Okay, if I pick a similarity metric, let's assume I'll pick the cosine theta metric. Okay, then what do? So represent the query also as a vector. So query comes, think of the query also as a vector. Okay, and then compute the cosine theta between the query vector and each of the document vectors. And then rank them in the order of most similar to the least similar. That means closest to 1 to closest to 0. Because it's a normalized measure between 1 and 0. Right? Okay, so that's it. And so if my query was database and index, those are the two keywords. Remember, queries have to be in the space of keywords. Okay, so if your keywords are all the terms in the document, then any two words would be fine. But if the keywords are only the ones that I allowed you, which is T1 to T6, then the query should be some subset of those keywords. So I pick database and index. If I do database and index, then if I compute the vector similarity over this, then I'll get these numbers. D1 is 0.70 similar, D2 is 0.77, 0.58, 0.6079, blah, blah, blah. So according to this, if I were to show you the top one document to the query, I will show that. Top two, I'll show that and that. Top three, and so on. Okay, so once you pick a similarity metric, the question is how to get this ranked list and show it to you. That's just a sorting problem. Again, if you have a billion documents that you need to sort, you better have nice and clever ideas. And if all the user is going to look at is the top 10 results, okay, and I have to sort billion documents only to give up 1 billion minus 10 losers because they've all been ranked and they'll never really amount to anything. What do I do? So there are billion people applying to universities. Finally, the university has 7 places. Okay, 7 minus, a billion minus 7 people are losers. They really don't want to evaluate them. They want them to pay the application fee. Okay, but they don't really want to evaluate them. What do? They will have the SAT score. And then use the SAT score and throw away 98% of the people, let's say. Or, color of the hair and say, bad hair day, 97% of the people are thrown out. And the rest of them, you can focus and then nicely get the top 10. Okay? So, in fact, those are things that we will talk about next class as to how to actually do the top K retrieval given a similarity metric. Okay? Without having to touch all billion documents and hopefully not losing too much in terms of the top 10 ranking, the true top 10 ranking. Okay. Any questions on this? You get to do this as a part of the homework. I think the last question of the homework asks you to actually recompute these numbers yourself. I just showed you the numbers. So the answer key is there. You need to compute that these are actually the right ones given the cosine theta similarity. Yes?
Does time similarity ever play a role in computing the metrics, like in a sense?
Individual similarity metric, no. But we will talk a lot about efficiency issues. In fact, the whole idea of inverted indices is the first step into this. We'll talk about that as soon as I get done with this. Okay? So it's more likely the next class, the whole of next class would be efficient retrieval and indexing. And that will be very relevant to you. Okay. So the last thing in this general common vector space model, in any of these models, this slide really, I'm talking about this after the vector space model, but it also is relevant to whether you consider bag model or Euclidean distance, it doesn't matter. This kind of goes back to the question that one of the students had asked and other people probably thought, which is, why are you thinking that all keywords are created equal? Maybe some keywords are more important than the other keywords. And so somehow you need to give differential weights to the keywords. It's not just the number of times the keyword is present, but something to do with its real importance. Now the question, of course, is how do you figure out which keywords are more important, which are less important? And it turns out that is really a much harder problem called feature selection. What that means is that if you're trying to basically classify the documents, in fact, what we are trying to do in IR is to classify the documents into two classes, relevant, not relevant. Okay? So it's a classification learning problem for those of you who know machine learning, and we will talk about it again in this class too. And really the question is, in trying to decide whether it's relevant or irrelevant, I want to figure out which features have a bearing on the classification. So for example, I'm trying to decide among the sea of faces looking at me, I'm trying to kind of, classify you into intelligent, not intelligent. Right? Okay? That's the only classification that matters to me. Okay? And so the question is, there are a whole bunch of features. Some of you are wearing red shirts, some of you are wearing blue shirts, some have long hair, some have short hair, and some are actually taking notes, some are looking at their computers, and there are different of these features. And the question is, which features are important for me in deciding what the classification is? I might, for example, say whether or not your shirt has checks on it probably is not at all connected to whether you are intelligent or not intelligent. Okay? And so I'll remove that from consideration to begin with. And so I will reduce you to just 5 or 6 features. Are you looking at it, like looking at me intently? Are you sleeping or not sleeping? Are you taking notes or not taking notes? And do I know your GPA? And these kinds of things. Okay? And then those are the only features I'll focus on, and I'll compare you, and so all of you then will become vectors in this 5 or 6 dimensional space, as against infinite dimensional space that you believe you are part of. Okay? For me, the only features that matter is probably this 5 or 6 dimensions, and then I can then compute the similarity between your vector representation and your vector representation in that space. Okay? So the way to do it, of course, that's the general idea of feature selection, and what features matter depends on what it is that I'm trying to classify you for. If I'm trying to classify whether you are intelligent or not intelligent, then the fact that this guy is wearing a checked shirt is irrelevant. If on the other hand, I'm trying to talk about whether or not you have a sense of style, right? Who the heck cares what your GPA is? It matters whether or not you're wearing checked shirts and plaid pants, right? Those become very important features. Okay? So the point I'm trying to make is what I'm trying to solve in this slide really cannot be solved unless I know what it is that is relevant to the user versus not relevant to the user. Because different people find different things relevant. However, what we'll do at this point is we'll find one solution fits all. Essentially, ignore the user, assume that everything, we can do just one feature selection. Basically, relative feature importance can be computed once and for all in the beginning itself. And if you're doing that, the maximum you can potentially do would be these two ideas. One idea is, since words are our features in the document, you can, for example, consider how often is the word present in this document. That's an important issue. The more times it is present somehow, the more the document thinks that it is representative of itself. That's why you're using those words. Okay? So in fact, how many of you have seen the most recent New York Times after Obama's State of the Union address, where they compared the bag of words of Obama's State of the Union address this year versus the first year address last year to Bush's, George Bush's average bag of words. And they found out how many times has he used word deficit this year versus last year. How many times has he used the word change this year versus last year? Right? And we are trying to differentiate between them just by looking at, so if he uses a word lots and lots of times, such as deficit, then suddenly Obama has turned deficit hawk after Massachusetts election. Until then, we just wanted happiness, but now we are deficit hawks, right? So the number of times a word is occurring in your speech is important. So that's one factor. That's called the TF factor. And the word TF, the abbreviation TF is nothing but term frequency. The number of times the term is present. Okay? But if you really look at the number of words Obama used many, many times in his speech and only looked at the number of times they were used, the most important word he used then would be the word the, because he kept using the. Okay? I would have given a nicer speech without the. Okay? But that's a different story. And then he then used the word USA every once in a while so that Republicans will stand up and clap. Right? Now, the point is, would you say the USA is just as important as the word deficit? No. Why? Because presumably every possible president who ever gave a State of Union, whether or not there was a TV, used the word USA like 10,000 times. Okay? And so it's sort of not important. Everybody says it. What I really want to know is, what do you say that's different from what other people say? Okay, so the interesting thing is the following, right? We all differentiate each other between, oh my God, he's looking dark, he's looking white, he has longer hair, he has shorter hair. If people from Mars, aliens from Mars come, they don't look at all like us, and they look at all of us and say, my God, how uniform these guys look. There's really no variation among them. Everybody has the same old two hands, two legs, one nose, you know, just really no, not much of a change. So given that we pretty much are completely similar in most things, we only focus on the little things on which we are different. Look, I have long nails. I got like 77.8 points in the last exam, whereas you only got 77.4. Okay, this becomes like important thing. Why is it important? It's not important in the grand scheme of things, but it is important because it differentiates you from the other people. Okay, feature selection is always in terms of differentiating classes. Okay, so the second part, apart from the frequency of a word in the document, the other component I want to decide whether or not that word is important is how common is this word? How common is this word across the corpus? Yes, I have 10,000 instances of the word the, but everybody has like more than 1,000 instances of the word the. So then the fact that I have 10,000 instances doesn't mean anything. Right? Okay? So that aspect, that component is basically captured by the notion of inverse document frequency, IDF. Okay? And so where you can actually have nice conversation in your frat parties to say that your IDF is low, you know, and then and see if they understand it or they stop talking to you, whatever. So the IDF essentially is low means you're so common, you're so plebeian, you know, everybody is just like you and there's nothing sets you apart from everybody else. And then by being different in a frat party, you will get thrown out. That's a different story. The point is that if I have the IDF for each term and the TF for each term, I combine them in some way. And the normal way we would do is TF times IDF. And in fact, one of the most interesting ideas to come out of the IR literature, it turns out, is TF-IDF. Okay? It's very useful. Simple idea, but extremely useful. Okay? So, now question, of course, is I know how to compute the TF, which is just the number of instances of the word in the document. Now, how do I compute the IDF? It is the fraction of the documents in the corpus that have this word. It's the fraction of the documents in the corpus that have this word. Now, normally, what you'll wind up doing is actually you talk about normalized TF. So the normalized TF is TF by TFI by max of TF. That means you normalize the frequency of any keyword by dividing it with the frequency of the maximally frequent keyword in the document. Okay? This captures the idea of length of the document. If Obama talks for 1 hour and used 10,000 thus, right, then if he talked for 2 hours, he would have used 20,000 thus. Okay, that obviously the frequency increases. But what really matters to us is the relative frequency of the keywords in the speech. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll take for each word the number of times it occurs in that document, and I normalize it by dividing it by the number of times any keyword appears in the document. The number of times the maximally frequent keyword in the document appears. Okay, for different documents, this maximum would be different. Okay, so you take all the keywords in the document, compute their TFs, and then divide each TF by max over all these TFs. That would be the max normalized term frequency. For the IDF, what I really need is the size of the corpus, you know, divided by the size of the number of documents that actually have that keyword. Okay, if everybody has that keyword, then it will become 1. If not, it would be, so that's the lowest. If everybody has that keyword, let's see, what I want to do actually is this. The total number of keywords, total number of documents containing the keyword K divided by the size of the corpus. Okay, and what I can do is, what do I want this to be? the bigger it is, the less useful the IDF is. That means if a term has a very high value for that, it will be less useful. Low value for it, it will be more useful. What is the highest value this can get? 1. When it becomes 1, you want it to be less useful. And I want to multiply this by the TF to get the effective weight. So one idea is to take a function which becomes 0 for 1. Okay? And in fact, that's not the real reason we do it, but if you take log of the total size of the corpus divided by the number of documents in the corpus which actually have this keyword, okay, this IDF value would be equal to 0 when nc equal to nk. Okay, if only one document had this word, this means this document is very special. It's really, nobody else has this word. You have it. So it really means when people are looking for that word, you will obviously stand out. Okay, the maximum that would, this number would become is NC over 1, which is NC, which is the size of the corpus. It's too big a number. Frequencies may be, normalized frequencies may be between, in fact, normalized frequencies already are between 0 and 1. Right, because I'm normalizing. This number, if I don't take the log, would become a huge number. If I take the log, in essence, it will come to the same scale as the term frequencies. Plus, it will become 0 when that number is 1 and larger. I mean, it will become 0 when that number is 1 and non-zero when it's greater than 1. And the biggest it will ever become is log of NC. Okay, that will happen when you are the only, this document has the, there's only one document that contains that keyword. Okay? So, for each document now, for each keyword in that document, I compute the term frequency for that keyword, normalize it, multiply it by the inverse document frequency for that keyword. Inverse document frequency for that keyword. Okay, and that will give me the weighted version of the document. Okay, if I do that, then essentially I have a vector still, but in a slightly different space now, because essentially the dimensions are the same, but the coefficients will change. Okay, the more common words, if you have too many of them, too many instances of them, it doesn't mean too much. If it's a less common word, you will get more out of it. That means your length in that dimension increases if it is a less common word. Okay? Yes? Corpus size means the document, total number of documents in the collection. Right? The worst that can happen to you is everybody has, I mean, imagine, like, it's like the fashion faux pas, right? I mean, you wear a certain dress because you want to stand out, and you find that everybody saw the same exact TV program as you did, and everybody is wearing the same exact dress. Unless you want to join army, you would not be very happy, right? Because, you know, you look the same as everybody else. Another example, you know, IDF, we use it all the time. How many of you know the story of Alibaba? Come on, you guys at least saw the Walt Disney picture of the Alibaba, right? So the bad guys are essentially coming and they're trying to figure out which place, which home Alibaba is living in. And so they put an X on that home, on that door, and go away. So now nobody else has an X. This one has an X. It's a very high IDF, bad IDF to have, because you'll get killed tomorrow. So what do you do? You can actually try to remove it. Right, and most likely if you remove the way I do, people can say there is this part of this door which looks really cleaner compared to everybody else's door in that patch. Right? The simplest idea is to go put crosses on everybody's door. Then you have converted the IDF to zero, which is exactly what they did. They were doing information retrieval in their own way in those days. Right? And so they saved themselves. So you reduce the IDF by essentially making everybody have the same word. Okay? So if you want to the only thing is, so the weight of a ijth word would be the frequency of the ijth word divided by the maximum frequency of any word in the document multiplied by the log of the number of documents in the corpus divided by the number of documents in the corpus that have that word. Okay? That would be the weight. Now, of course, you can do this. So this, now all the documents will wind up having different coefficients in this new world, right? So, so in fact, if this is your original space of the documents, right? Now, if I do the TF-IDF, okay, this would be the matrix. And you get to do this too at home, okay, just to make sure that I'm not making this up, okay? So you can actually compute the TF and IDF. You have a document corpus of size what? 10. And you're taking logs over 10 divided by some number. It's not that bad, okay? So in this case, for example, you notice that even though this is 24 and this is 21, so database and SQL are both pretty, you know, high frequency in the original representation. After you scaled them with commonality taken into account, database is only 2.53, whereas SQL wins the day because it got a 14.56. What that means is if you really want to be seen as a database dweeb, put an SQL somewhere in your document. And then there is no question in people's minds as to whether you are some sort of a politician who is talking about database of voters or a database dweeb who wants to do SQL for a living. But SQL is truly telling you, telling the world that I'm a database guy. Okay? And I just figured that out by just looking at the corpus of the database document. By the way, what I'm doing here, even though the 10 documents cannot be seen as the collective consciousness of the world, if I did this over the entire document space of a billion documents, then what I'm really doing is I'm realizing that these documents are made by people. They're not generated randomly. And in fact, people sort of separate themselves into natural clusters, database dweebs, the statistics people, and so on and so forth. And so all I am finding is to compute those, you know, recompute or make it explicit, those distinctions. Okay, so that would be my TF-IDF thing. And then for the query, now when I have a query, which is again database and index, I can do multiple things. I can just assume that the query is not, you know, is still a document with no weighting. Okay, that's one idea. That's what I'm actually using here. So database and index becomes 1, 0, 1, 0, 0, 0. Because database is the first keyword, index is the third keyword. Okay? And now if I re-rank them in terms of the TF-IDF similarity instead of TF similarity, which is what we were doing previously, okay, I get a different ranking. Now it turns out the guy who was winning last time around, D5, is not the winner. This time D2 is the winner. D2 has the highest similarity to the query. Okay? And using this is basically what gets done in most search engines too. Okay, and it's definitely a default thing that's done in IR. And one other thing we can do is this, there are variations you can do. You could, for example, you know, in what I chose to do is I modified the document, I didn't modify the query. Okay, I could also modify the query by, for example, computing the TF-IDF representation of it. Normally, TF probably is not going to have much of a difference because either you use the keyword or you don't use the keyword. You don't normally use multiple instances of that same keyword, which by the way is a homework assignment. If you give two instances of the same keyword in your query, would the top 10 results shown by your favorite search engine change as against just using one instance? So if you say Rav and then you get a top 10 results, you say Rav, 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 will you get the same top 10 results or you get, you know, much more sublime ones? Okay, and so you can figure this out. You can go check whether people, you know, what they do. But assuming that most people will write only one version of Rav, if at all, in their query, the TF part is not going to differentiate the queries. What does differentiate is the IDF. So you could, for example, reduce, you know, the importance of some of the words in the query. For example, somebody was saying the instructor. You can say, ah, the is too common. I won't look for it. That would be actually scaling the query too. Okay, so this is basically the bread and butter of the simple retrieval, you know, in vectors in IR. You know, you use vector space similarity with TF-IDF weighting. And when we come back next class, we'll spend most of the time not about ranking, but about how to do the ranking fast. Right now, we have 10 documents that you are trying to rank. Normally, a good IR system, and especially a search engine, will be trying to rank a billion documents with respect to a query, 8 billion documents with respect to a query. And writing a nice polynomial time algorithm that runs only, you know, in the size of the document space, and it's not more than, you know, cubic in the size of the document space, would mean, you know, give me your query and then I'll get back to you when you get out of the college and give you the answer. So how can you do it fast? That's what we'll do next time. Okay?